I see that we do form a quorum. Could we then start with the meeting, members? With the chairperson being unavailable, members, he has an urgent meeting that he is engaged in at the moment. He will be joining the meeting later on. He has requested that we continue with the meeting. Could we then proceed with the election of the acting chairperson?
Yes.
Could I then request members to proceed with the nomination?
I want to nominate Bapai.
I'm sorry, Chair. I'm sorry, Mr. Moshe.
I want to nominate.
Yes, proceed, sir.
Since it's a Women's Month, I think we must give the women a chance to get to the driving seat. Therefore, I nominate Honorable Modise to take that responsibility.
All right, Mr. Moshe. Thank you, Mr. Moshe. Is Mr. Modise in the meeting?
Yes, I'm here, Brian. I will accept the nomination, but not that I'm on my way to Cape Town, I'm in the airport for 11:30 flight, so I'll leave the meeting in the middle.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Modisa. Do I have a seconder for the nomination?
Lokwasa seconds the nomination, Brian.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lepasa. Do I have any other nominations?
Brian, can I just ask, if Ms. Modise acts as chairperson and she leaves us in the middle of the meeting, what do we do then? I don't mind supporting her, but we have to be realistic and we have to make sure that we can complete our meeting. So I'm just raising that because, then it means that, halfway through the meeting, We have to re-elect a chairperson.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Marais. Do I have input from other members?
Brian, I also want to agree with Mr. Marais. Maybe we can look for Ms. Butas or Ms. Lekhwas if they're in the meeting. As I've indicated that I'm currently at the airport for 11:30 flight. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Biokas.
I propose Comrade Lekhwas because I'm also driving to Cape Town. So,
Ms. Lekhwas, are you available? Ms. Lekhwas? Ms. Lekhwas? Ms. Lekhwas, are you available?
Brian?
Yes, Ms. Lekhwas.
I will be available when Ms. Modise finishes. Yes, I'm traveling, but I'll stand by the road. Though I will miss the flight, it's okay.
The members, the proposal from Ms. Lekhwas is that Ms. Modise continues immediately that she becomes unavailable. Ms. Lekhwas will take over from Ms. Modise. Is that acceptable to the meeting?
Brian, maybe let's allow Mr. Mute to chair the meeting for us today. We really do appreciate the confidence that he's is bestowing again on us as women in the Women's Month, but clearly it means we have challenges for today. So maybe I propose that we then allow Mr. Thabo Motle to chair today's meeting to avoid confusion later on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Modis. Mr. Motle, the proposal is that while members are happy that you have proposed them, they request that for today, to avoid confusion, Mr. Motle proceeds as acting chair.
Brian, I must indicate not that I do not want to chair, but I think reasons given by members, we all know that we are supposed to attend this meeting. We can't arrange any travel to travel during the times of the meeting. Therefore, I still stick to my proposal of Mrs. Modise. You can't travel during a meeting. You are supposed to arrange your travel before or after the meeting. Thank you very much.
Ms. Modise, are you available then?
It's fine, Mr. Brian. Let's continue. Let's continue the meeting.
Right. Do I have any other nominations? There being no other nominations, Ms. Modise will continue as acting chair. Thank you, members. Ms. Modise, may I hand over to you?
Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone, and welcome to this meeting today. I would request that the agenda of the day be flighted. You will also notice I've indicated that I'm in the airport, so I won't be able to show my video on the screen as I've logged on the phone.
Is it visible, teacher?
It is very visible on my side, Brian.
Acting chair, Ms. Modise?
Yes, it's visible, Brian. Thank you. Members, the agenda it has been flighted. It's the opening and welcome, which I have already dealt with. We will then move to the next item, which is apologies. Do you have any apologies?
Ms. Modise, indeed we do have apologies. We have an apology from the chair, who has had to attend to an urgent meeting that is sitting also at the same time. But he will be joining us during the course of the meeting, should he be able to do so. We have an apology from the minister, Minister Thadi Modise, who is unavailable due as she is attending the SADC summit, which is sitting in Malawi. We have an apology from the Honorable Ingosi Tabekulu, who is also unavailable. Mr. Mafanya is also unavailable as a result of ill health. Those are all the apologies that we have. Thank you, teacher.
Thank you, Mr. Brian. In light of the number of apologies forwarded, do we form a quorum for this meeting?
That is correct, ma'am. We do form a quorum. All we need to form a quorum are six members, and we do have six members.
Okay, no noted. Thank you. Those are the apologies, members. Let me check if they are accepted.
I propose, Chair, for the acceptance of the apologies.
Thank you, Ms. Biekas. Let's then move to our third item, which is the consideration and adoption of the DMV. I see the agenda has been removed from the screen, Mr. Brian. Thank you. The revised third term program. Can we then get the program also flighted?
Thank you, Acting Chair.
It is visible. Thank you so much. Colleagues, here is the revised.
Can I speak to it, Acting Chair?
Yes.
Acting Chair, the previous program, which was adopted by the committee, had 5 weeks. The 5 weeks were divided into two. The first three weeks were from the 17th of August to the 3rd of September. And thereafter the 3 weeks, there was a constituency period, which was from the 6th of September until the 4th of October. And thereafter there was 2 weeks that was provided from the 5th of October to the 15th of October, which was provided solely for the BRRR process. Now, what has happened is that the current parliamentary framework provides for a committee period which is from the 17th of August until the 1st of October, which is 6 weeks, which therefore means, in essence, an additional 1 week has been provided for the third term, but then the constituency period, which was in between, has been removed. If I can take members through the current revised program, the first week stands as is, which is today, the 18th of August. It stands as was adopted by the committee previously. The second week, which was the 25th of August, also stands as what was adopted previously, with the presentation by the ministerial task team on the findings in relation to the procurement of heparin medication from Cuba. It's still that item. It's still the second item, which is the DOD Inspector General and military police on all cases of financial misconduct. That has not changed. The third week, which is the 1st of September, the only item that has been removed there, previously we had the adoption of the preliminary BRRR, which we no longer need to adopt as we will provide for the BRRR process in the following weeks, which have been provided. That meeting of the 1st of September remains as was adopted with the removal of the one item of the preliminary BRRR, with the DMV reporting on progress regarding the presidential task team, as well as the second item, DMV responding to matters that were raised in the AXA report on the status of records. What has been added is the week of the 8th of September, where the DOD will be briefed and AMSO will be briefing the committee on the searching of assets. That is what has been added. The second item that has been added is the briefing by DOD, AMSCO, and the Department of Public Enterprises on the future of DINEL and the impact that has on the SANDF. What has also been brought back is the proposed oversight that had been cancelled in the previous term. As a result of the president announcing that the country would move to level four. We are proposing the 10th to the 13th for that oversight. We could not find a slot that would be during the week, because all of the weeks that have been provided will be having plenary sittings with the Tuesday, the Wednesday, and the Thursday. So we then propose that this oversight takes place from the Friday up until the Monday. That is a proposal that we are putting to members, should they accept that they would need to sacrifice their weekend. What has also been added, we had to move the annual report briefings forward. Members will remember that previously we had provided the date, we had been provided the dates from the 5th to the 15th of October for annual report briefings in order to adopt the BRRR. Now that the week of the 5th to the 15th is no longer available, this parliamentary program ends on the 1st of October. We had to move forward then those annual report briefings. Now from the 5th up until the 29th, we will be dealing with those annual report briefings culminating to the BRRR. From the 15th of September, we'll have the EG on the audit findings of the DOD, DMV, AMSCO, and CCB, and thereafter we'll have the DOD presenting on this annual report, and the following week we'll have the DMV annual report, the AMSCO annual report, the Coastal Control Board annual report, and thereafter the week of the 29th, adopt the BRRR. That is the program, the revised program, Acting Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Brian. Colleagues, here is the program. It has been changed. Will affect only 1 week. I want to check also, Brian, is it possible that the briefing that should take place on the 8th of September can be clubbed together with the oversight, since it will be in Pretoria, the headquarters and the arms corps, instead of conducting our oversight over the weekend? We could then take that briefing the first day in that week, during the week, that week of the 8th. So we can take a briefing there after a conduct and oversight. I'm just checking if it's possible, instead of moving it over the weekend. Club together the briefing of the DOD and AMSCO on the searching of assets, and AMSCO and DP on the future of the NL and the impact of the SNDF, and then have like of the DOD head option. That's possible.
We can attempt to that, ma'am. It means we would need to apply for that and provide reasoning as to why we want to have that, but it's possible, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much. Colleagues, here's the program that has been presented. Can I, for comment?
Chairperson?
It will be, yes, I can say it will be Mr. Marais first and then followed by Mr. Mutle. In that order?
Chairperson, yes, thank you very much for the opportunity to add. And I know, there's a lot of legislative requirements that we need to attend to. I want to support your suggestion that we try to move the 10th to the 13th, move it backwards to the 8th. Although I don't mind if we meet over the weekend, so I will support your suggestion that we do that oversight and then include the 8th presentations to us while we are in Pretoria. But if that is not acceptable, then I will propose that we accept the program as is. That is my suggestion, because there's work to be done, and we've got limited time available. And if it plays out that we need to work over a weekend, no problem. That's our responsibility and duty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marey. Mr. Mote?
Thank you, Acting Chair. I want to also support your proposal and move for the adoption of this program with those possible amendments. However, we'll then get a report from Brian probably in the next meeting whether the incorporation of that meeting into the oversight is successful or not, so that we are able to diarise correctly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mute. Brian, I think we will then in the next week or so get a guidance from yourself if it is possible to club together the two programs.
Chairperson, if I can add, maybe make a suggestion to Brian. As part of his proposal of why this is so important, is also what we have experienced during this unrest period in KZN and Gauteng, which has put the emphasis on the importance of the role of the SANDF beyond any doubt. And I think even the Chair of Chairs will acknowledge that. And this is part of our work, it's part of our responsibility, and they must really empower us and give us the bit of a leeway. This is unusual times, and it asks for unusual approaches. So this is not normal, and we have to do, they must allow us to do that oversight and deal with the challenges that is facing the whole nation, and it's not only for us. So Brian, use what we have got to convince them that this is absolutely essential. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marey. Colleagues, Mr. Mute has moved for the adoption of the program with amendments. Any seconder?
I second, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beatrice. Colleagues, we will then move to the next item.
Chairperson, can I just request Brian to also send the amended program to all of us, please?
Definitely.
We'll do so, Chair, Acting Chair.
Thank you. Can we then move to the third item on the program, on the agenda?
It is the DOD, Acting Chair.
So we will deal with the short term managing people with other voice deployed in support of either the pandemic or law enforcement within the country. In terms of defense capabilities provided, the middle column, it's an amber, which means partially achieved, and there we achieved 6 out of the 9 for the 4 targets, and the targets not achieved dealt with the hours flown or hours at sea, as well as 1 maritime coastal patrol that has not taken place as planned in the fourth quarter. I will also again elaborate on details in the 3 bulleted annuals. Capabilities employed, the UN reimbursement amount received, as previously indicated, we were only reimbursed up until the end of August last year. So the statements from September last year to March this year are still outstanding. And in terms of the percentage adherence to the subject pledge, in terms of the SA Navy, the large SA Navy vessel was not available for deployment during that quarter. In terms of capabilities supported, that is green, and then we achieved the target for the fourth quarter as planned. On the next slide, slide 8, just this I quarter on slide 8, just this I quarter to quarter analysis on achievement during the previous financial year per quarter, where we achieved quarter 1 73%, quarter 2 50, etc. up until quarter 4, where we achieved 65%, which resulted in 24 out of the 37 targets achieved. I'm now on slide 9. It just doesn't show currently. Slide 9, we are going to deal with the pre-audited annual. As I mentioned in the introductory, to assist the committee with the monies for amendment as well as the DRRR processes that is planned for the coming month. I just need to inform the committee that the accounting officer has already written letters to the executive, the National Treasury, as well as IGSA. In terms of the accounting officer's inability to submit the annual report in terms of section 41D on 31 August. The reason for that being that the IG, the Auditor General, did inform the department that the final audit report will only be ready, presumably 30 September, worst case scenario. So the accounting officer indicated that we will not adhere to the normal legislative target date in terms of submission of annual reports. Therefore, as per that slide 10, the dashboard, the end result of defense's performance for the 2020-2021 year are depicted in this dashboard. The two top green areas relate to the two DoD outcomes, of which the first outcome deals with accountable and effective governance of the DoD to enhance civil control. And that area predominantly resumes within the accounting officer's environment. And that area has been achieved. In terms of the second large green area, relates directly to the SADF in terms of effective and sustainable defense force capacity to execute orders commitment. The 5 areas below relate to the 5 defense outcomes, of which we achieved 25 out of the 38 output indicators that were achieved. On slide 11, the next slide, we give an indication of the degree of non-achievement. Now, since of the 13 output indicators not achieved, the red area, the smallest circles indicate the degree of achievement. So, one output indicator has been achieved to an extent greater than 90%. Five indicators to an extent between 70 and 80%. Five greater than 50%, whilst two indicators were achieved less than 50%. On the next slide, 12, the indicators and the consideration is indicated, and I need to highlight a few of the non-achievement as the reasons thereof. If we look, for instance, on the fourth line, the percentage audits completed in terms of the internal audit plan, 83%. Something to take into consideration is the year-on-year improvement in this area. And we are well aware that most of the internal audit scope of work was redirected during the year under review towards COVID-19 related audits. And by saying that the year-on-year improvement from 1920 to the 2021 year is from a 59% in the previous year to 83%. So I think although the audit plan has not been achieved fully at only 83%, we should take in consideration the additional audit load in terms of COVID-19 firstly, and then secondly the year-on-year improvement to that. If we also look at flying hours and hours at sea not achieved, I think the committee is also aware that the achievement of both sets of these hours are mainly firstly dependent on tasking to deploy, firstly, and secondly, on the operational availability of either aircraft or vessel. And what we also experienced during the 2021 year in the midst of COVID, especially at in the eye of COVID that far, delivery times of spares were greatly affected by COVID from the contractors and the suppliers due to the whole situation in the country. So in terms of flying hours, 80% achievement in terms of planned hours, while in terms of hours at sea, 68%. I spoke previously on reimbursement received from the United Nations. Only 52% of the planned reimbursements were received, and that indicated from September 20 onwards, those reimbursement statements at the point of reporting were still outstanding. And then in terms of the strategies, the planned strategies were not finalized and approved, mainly due to the fact that it's still work in progress in terms of the overarching defense strategy that will then inevitably enforce the lower level strategies in terms of the overarching logistics strategy for India. On slide 30, a year-on-year indication is provided to the committee on year-on-year achievement. And whilst the 2021 year was the third year of the new strategic period or the new NCSF, 66% of the set targets were fully achieved. If we page over to the next first quarter. Slide 15, just as background, introduces the performance indicators of the state. What is important is that the committee will see that the number of indicators over time have been reduced to an extent. At the point, the things that a myriad of indicators that did not necessarily spoke to the achievement of the defense mandate. So with the implementation and institutionalization of the RBA, and specifically in the strategic period, our output indicators have been realigned to be very, very specific to defense business. And the figure on the right-hand side that's predominantly in the turquoise and green indicates the number of indicators in relation to the different outputs. And that gives the accounting officer the tool to be able to see in terms of performance where intervention should be implemented to keep a specific DOD output on track. Or be it then strategic direction provided, capabilities prepared, provided, supported. Of importance is also the bottom graph or the bottom figure indicates that for this 30 indicators, there are 66 targets that are over the four quarters, divided over the four quarters. So some indicators might only have one target in a specific quarter, while other indicators might have four targets for each quarter. So at the end of a financial year, achievement of these 66 targets rolls up so that we can express ourselves in terms of the team's mandate and the five outputs, whether the indicators supporting this output have been sufficiently achieved or not. On slide 16, we just indicate that the results-based management framework has been implemented as a management tool. And on slide 17, the framework is on a figure that indicates the impact defense strives towards to enhance and contribute to peace, security and stability in the country, the region, Africa and the world through appropriate resource sustained defense capability. I spoke already on the two outcomes, the second layer dealing with the civil oversight board and execute order commitment, and the five green areas then indicates the five defense outputs I've been spoken on during the previous slide. Slide 18 then gives a perspective on a dashboard. Slide 18, how the quarter one performance looks. So in terms of the outcome defense strategic direction provided, there was one target for quarter one set, and that related to promulgation of plans. And during that quarter, 25 out of the 30 plans were promulgated. There were few that had to be on lower level, that had to be aligned with the new results-based model, and those have subsequently or been in the next quarter approved, and we will report on that during quarter two. As previously mentioned, training targets are still influenced by the limitation on movement of personnel, as well as pandemic in the country, and we know during this first wave, there were specific areas of concern where some of our training institutes are, and so training specifically relating to the Air Force and the Military Health Service were not executed according to plan. And the committee are also aware that our SI Military Health Service, in terms of Operation Vimba, were deployed also in support of the Department of Health. And all these factors, they culminate in something like a training target not achieved. In terms of the first output capabilities provided, there were no specific quarter one target set under that output. And then in the last output, in terms of capabilities supported, two out of the four targets were not achieved. The first one relates to the number of defense intelligence products, and the main reason for that being that there were a lower requirement for specific intelligence products to be provided. There was a decrease in the number of deliberate crime prevention operations conducted, and for the committee's information, the average age of a military police soldier is in the tune of 45. So the impact of COVID-19 on their health was quite significant. And then again, the COVID-19 restrictions of movement culminated in the fact that specific deliberate crime prevention operations could not be executed as planned. The next slide introduces the overall corporate HR status, and on slide 20, in short, the department plans to maintain an average regular force strength during the year of just over 73,000 members. Having said that, the projected shortfall on the COE, the compensation of employee budget, is currently, as at the end of quarter one, predicted at in the tune of 2.2 billion. This projected shortfall takes into consideration that the January 2021 MSCS intake has been cancelled, and MSCS intakes will in future alternate every second year. So the next intake is planned for January 2022. This shortfall may or may not increase or decrease depending on the current situation. And we know that we are already deployed in Mozambique in terms of a deployment that was not planned at the time of this budget. So this amount will increase, decrease depending on realities within the country, and we will report accordingly during quarters to follow. The next slide deals with forced employment, and slide 22 just indicates that within this current MTSF, the SIPF supports priority 67 of government directives. Priority 6 deals with social cohesion and safer community, and there we know we support this priority by means of the number of land force sub-units deployed and our maritime coastal patrols conducted. While in terms of a better African world, there the SIPF support in terms of external positions, rescue operations, humanitarian assistance as and when required within the country. So I 23 new then with activities supporting priority 6, where the SIPF supported response to Operation Corona Maritime Patrol were conducted on the Tyneside in South Coast as well as the Western Cape. And in that regard, the submarine Mantashe has been deployed as well as the Maritime Reaction Squadron in the Overberg region in the Western Cape. In terms of slide 24, as we indicated always, the operational Corona operational successes for the period up until 30 June. And of importance also the contrabanded goods confiscated in the tune of just over 80 million rand, as well as other areas as indicated in the table. In terms of slide 24, we deal with priority 7, and in that regard, the FIDF supports this priority by means of regional security provided. And we did provide continued force structure elements in the DRC in terms of Operation Mistral, and no long-range Operation Copper. Patrol was done during quarter one. The main reason was that the FA Navy reprioritized funding towards maintenance and repair of naval platforms for deployment in terms of Operation Athena, which is the Mozambique operation. So a long-range patrol was not conducted. Slide 26 indicate for quarter one safety and security support provided, and now the FNDF was not requested to provide in terms of offer for quarter one safety and security support. We will of course during this next quarter report quite extensively there on in the light of the situation recently, especially in KZN and Gauteng. In terms of slide 27, disaster aid and relief, the FNDF did assist in that regard, but of importance on slide 27, the last bullet, deals with Operation Bimba, where the FNDF supported the Department of Health in the provision of tertiary medical care in the Gauteng province over the period that's indicated on the slide. Slide 28, during quarter one, the FNDF was not requested to support in terms of any search and rescue operations. The next slide introduces slide 29, the DoD selected performance indicators. And the importance of this and the reason why we always present the selected indicators to the committee are basically threefold. Firstly, these are the indicators that are included in the estimate of national expenditure and for which the department receives specific allocation every year. These indicators are predominantly mandate-driven and are the largest cost drivers in the department, as we are talking about 10 indicators. On page 30 and 31, the 10 indicators are indicated, and at the end of the first quarter, all the indicators were on track, with the exception of the compliance with the subject, standby force, and I indicated that the Navy, large naval vessel was not available at the point. And slide 31 indicates the progressive achievement towards the flying hours target. We should highlight that these hours, as I previously indicated, are dependent on specific tasking criteria, and it's not achieved on a straight line basis in terms of 25% of the how it comes to reported. It depends on the situation and the specific requirements for deployment of either aircraft or vessels. Slide 32 is just a synopsis. As per the dashboard on the 7 output indicators achieved against the planned 12. And the little graph below just indicates where the gray bar indicates the total population per quarter. The green relates to the 58% achieved, whilst the red bar relates to the 41% not achieved. The next slide will produce financial performance information, where slide 34 indicates the DOD planned expenditure for quarter 4 was 24%, while the actual expenditure as at 30 June related to 22.3%. Slide 35 then indicates per main program what has happened financially in the quarter. The column in circles in turquoise indicates the approved drawing or cash flow per main program, while the column in circles in green indicates the actual expenditure per main program that happened at the end of June, and the column in circles in orange indicates the variance between the actual cash flow and the actual expenditure. Then the areas of note relates to administration, where there was a 25% variance of, in terms of expenditure, and that basically relates to the fact that the DOD received invoices for accommodation charges very, very late in March, and these invoices were verified as legitimate and paid at that point in time, and the report saw previously that those invoices would have been paid the first week of April. So it has been paid in the previous financial year, and therefore the variance in that column. In terms of air defense and maritime defense, there's a 15% and a 12% deviation. That's mainly due to the fact that certain contracts for the placement of aircraft systems, basically for the Gripen and the war, all air freight, were still ongoing at the time of the quarter. And there was also some delays in contracts with the Oryx, the Royfolk and the C-130 due to the current status of the NAL. And within the maritime program, that 12% donation are mainly attributed to the fact that delivery of spares were shifted to the right by contractors. So where the Navy plans for spares to be delivered and paid during quarter one, it did not take place due to a situation within the defense industry. And I also mentioned that due to the fact that the off-proper long-range deployment did not take place, the cash flow did not materialize, and that funding imported to come will now be reprioritized for maintenance and repair on naval platforms to support of the KLA deployment. On slide 36, the information the financials provided on slide 36, the total expenditure or the carbon copy of the previous slide. It is just that someone different, but it directed toward compensation of employees, goods and services, etc. And the deviation in goods and services relates to these delays in the delivery of spares for maintenance and repair on our aircraft and vessels. Slide 37, 38 and 39 just indicate the reasons that are described or indicated in the previous two slides. It is 38 and 39. If we then can go over to the next slide that introduces the budgetary review and recommendation report on slide 40. If we then go to slide 41. This figure endeavors to indicate to the committee that the BRRR of 2020 consisted of 22 recommendations. These recommendations were analyzed and then categorized in four main categories, of which the category of external or strategic interventions required and funding or resource challenges amount to 55% of the recommendations made. These are also recommendations that predominantly outside the area of control of the accounting officer and need higher level intervention. And these recommendations that I'm speaking of predominantly relate to the recommendations where the committee required the minister through other forums to engage either with industry in terms of the situation at the now or even with National Treasury in terms of funding requirements. Recommendations that are in the area of the accounting officer's responsibility where we can make a difference on the short term relates to the blue area that deals with internal departmental processes. And these recommendations are mainly in terms of legal investigations to be conducted sooner, disciplinary cases to be done, payment of suppliers on time. And then one relates to projects, and that's predominantly in terms of the future of project roof items. I need to indicate also to the committee that in terms of the BRRR, progress data has been reported in detail by the accounting officer during the portfolio committee of 5 May this year. Now at the end of quarter 1, 30 June, proceeded, but for the sake of the committee, I will highlight areas where specific progress has been made during the quarter and the review. The detail of all the recommendations were attached to Appendix F of the narrative document. The first area I need to highlight deals with, still on this slide 41, deals with the recommendation in terms of the spending on the specific amount received for borderline technology. And I think the committee is well aware that defense is just but one player in the arena of borderline. Due to the fact that South Africa has such an extensive border, whether it is land, air or sea, so the security cluster is co-responsible for border, for the borderline and then the provision of borderline technology. However, during the first this quarter, we think this might progress, and certain procurements were done in terms of UIVs, while 20 UIV pilots were tried. They all currently specific plans to spend that 2 to 5 million for borderline technology that was appropriated over a 3-year period. So during quarter two, other expenditure or progress will be reported on. So for now, it will remain at the UIVs and the training of the pilot. Plans are in place to utilize the funds in this year for land, air and maritime border technology. In terms of the funding of Project Baro and Hotel, that was very worrisome previously. The Defence can report that within reprioritization within the department, both Project Hotel and Baro, which is the in the Navy environment, the hydrographic vessel and the IPV, sufficient funds have been made available to honour the full contract period. So that is really something to report on currently. In terms of interventions that Defence put in place, in terms of case finalisation within the legal area, during quarter one, three full-time senior military judges were appointed to exclusively deal with serious offences, whether that is financial conduct or offences with a sexual nature. 5 prosecuting counsels have also been provided to support this process, and during quarter one, the legal services within the state managed to finalize 21 cases of a serious offense nature. And then finally, in terms of vetting decisions taken, which is currently predominantly dependent on human resources and capacity within the Defence Intelligence, certain interim measures are still in place to supplement the current structure. But during quarter one, having these interim measures in place, 2,417 vetting decisions were taken, which was actually in the tune of 900 decisions additional to the planned target for quarter one. Chairperson, as the year progressed and during the quarter two report, progress against these recommendations will be continued to be reported on and highlighted, and the progress report will be attached to the back for the committee as we did this quarter. If we can go over to the next slide, which deals with the progress report on the portfolio committee budget vote 23, on slide 43 then. This is just an extract of the ministerial letter that went to the portfolio committee on 2 July, dealing with 3 of the recommendations made by the committee that had to be reported on at the end of June of this year. And these 3 responses in the ministerial letter in detail responded to the compensation of employee areas. It responded to the increase attractive, as well as the increase of expenditure within the ministry. I will not touch on these responses as it was communicated formally by the minister. However, as per the letter to the minister in terms of feedback to be provided during the session, deal specifically with the refit of primary vessels and the frigates and submarines, projects Napoleon and so on. And in terms of feedback regarding progress made during quarter one, I need to indicate that the availability of resources greatly impacts on refit of both the frigates and the submarines. So due to historic funding shortages, only one of the four frigates, SIS Amatola, was partially refitted in the fifth year 1450, whilst only one of our three submarines, SIS Mantashi, was refitted in 2013-14. Funding for the refit of the remaining three frigates is Awana, Spelunkop and Mendi, and the submarine Queen Najachi II is currently still not available for any refit since the vessels were taken into our account. The Navy's current focus is to complete the refit of the submarine Charlotte Makeke, which remains work in process under the auspices of the Arms Corps Dockyard. So that is currently work in process, while plans to refit the remaining three frigates and submarines, as I mentioned, will only be finalized once progressive funding becomes available. And it's very important to note that the cost to refit a frigate amounts to in the tune of $687 million, while the refit on a submarine is somewhat less, in the tune of $660 million. The SA Navy will prioritize currently maintenance and repair on the frigates Spelunkop and Mendi and the SIS Drakensberg to ensure expedited operational availability in the year to come, the rest of the year. Chairperson, that concludes the presentation. Any questions can be directed to.
With our presentation, we have finished with our presentation and we will welcome any questions and discussions.
Thank you very much, colleague.
Acting Chair, I think you have broken away bad signal probably.
Brian?
Yes, Ms. Pierce.
I think, honorable members, if it's okay with you, the proposal was that one of the women must chair the meeting because it's Women's Month. Can I then stand in as a woman? Because honorable Lukwasi, I think, is experiencing network problems.
No problem, I support. Let me proceed.
thank you, Honourable Member. Yes?
No, you can continue, Zandra.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. And I think, Honourable Members, I will now allow for questions. Are there any hands?
Yes, mine is up.
Honourable Marais, you can start. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson. Thank you very much to the sector and the department. Obviously, with the time available, I will not deal with all the issues that was submitted and presented to us. I will only deal with a selected few. I will start off by just concentrating on projects Byra and Hotel. I'm glad and it's good news. All the three inshore patrol vessels and also the what is of concern to me is that it was reported that it was reprioritized funds within the department. So it is obviously important to know where that has been reprioritized from and what will be the effect of the reprioritization of the funds from other budgeted items. I'm asking the question to know how it will affect an impact on our defense capability and readiness, because if we steal from Peter to pay Paul, which seems to be the approach at the moment, that is a major concern, because if we don't need the money where it is originally been prioritized for, why was it budgeted for those items? Do we see a strategy of doing budgets, knowing very well that we can do without that, so only for that to be reprioritized during the course of the year? That is a major concern, and I want to know what is our financial obligations for each of the medium-term years on Project Byra and Hotel, and whether we are honoring all of that. Then I also want to know, given what we have experienced now in South Africa, both in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and to a certain extent in the Western Cape, whether any consideration was given to amend the training doctrine of the Defence Force to provide for training to our soldiers for domestic and inland, if I can use that phrase, deployment. Then I want to also ask in terms of the increase for Operation Prosper, whether there was any negotiations and discussions with National Treasury that will be accommodated in the BRRR process for additional funds specifically for Operation Prosper, because we know initially it was just over 600 million rand. And now it's another 250 million rand. So in other words, we are getting close to a billion rand already. And it's expected that that we will probably extend Operation Prosper beyond next month as well. So the effect of that must be known to us so that we can properly consider that. In terms of cost of employees, I'm very concerned to see that there seems to be no indication that the cost of employees will be reduced substantially in line with not only international trends, but also in terms of the defense review and specifically guidelines by National Treasury. It seems like we are still kind of balancing out at about 73,000 strong numbers of employees. If my calculation is correct, and you can respond to that, Secretary of Defense, The budget was 29.347 million, the approved budget, and that already was 63.43% of the Defence Force budget. If you are now indicating a shortfall of 2.270, that means that we'll have to be funded from inside. That means that our cost of employees will be 31.617 billion rand, which implicates that it will go to 68.34%. Now, again, there's another a budget item that must be funded from stealing from Peter to pay Paul. So the effect of that on many others and our preparations is just going to be exacerbated tremendously. And if we don't deal with that specific ones, then we are closing ourselves out for a major problem that we are facing. And the demand for the Defence Force, we know, is going only bigger and bigger and bigger. I also want to know, in terms of Operation Kela, it was confirmed to us in a meeting that SADC will fully fund Operation Vakela, because it was indicated in terms of the naval deployment to Mozambique, that seems to be an additional cost to us and a reason why we need to spend money to make sure that we have got an additional frigate available. Then I also want to find out, in terms of the refits, I recall it's either in the beginning of this term or the previous term, the figures that was given to us was that the frigates will require 750 million rand each for a refit, and the submarines 450 million. I now see that it has been reported that the three frigates will cost 687 million each, but the submarines at basically a staggering 660 million rand each. So there seems to be a huge increase in the refit cost of the submarines. Why is that? And that is an additional, just over 3 billion rand that we require for that. And it has been reported that the current submarine will enjoy priority. Is that basically to replace the batteries? That we know that was a problem in the past that has been reported to us, and then the additional frigate that they will try to refit and to make it available for Operation Vakela. How will that be funded, and where will that be coming from? Because if it is another example of stealing from Peter to pay Paul, it means that we are running into major, major, major problems, and we are just postponing the eventual challenge. So if I will stop there. There are many other questions that I can ask, but we must know. Oh, the other question I just wanted to find out, in terms of the cost of employees, I believe that 1.79 billion rand has been transferred from goods and services. What effect will that, and there is an example of stealing from Peter to pay Paul, what effect will that 1.79 billion on goods and services has on the defense capability and defense readiness? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Marie. Brian, do you see any other hands? Brian?
No, I don't.
Okay. If we then, Secretary, just to add on what Mr. Marais was saying about the cost of employees, I think year out and year in we hear about the shortfall on cost of employees. What do you think is the best solution, except to cut down on employment or on current employees? Because I don't think it's the only solution. And if we look on what was happening or what is happening, so is there a plan in the department to see how you can deal with the fact? But then on the progress reports, Secretary, what is the challenges encountered to implement the recommendation? And secondly, what was the impact of COVID on the implementation of our recommendation? Or was there an impact of COVID on to implement some of our recommendations? Secretary of Defense, you can now lead us to respond and also to lead your officials to respond. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with the answers, with the questions that you have raised. If you would recall, Chairperson, on the matter of the cost of employees, it was the only item where we were overspending as a department, where we exceeded the ceiling that was put there. And I think that with the interventions of the portfolio committee, we were then requested as a department to look at what is the best way of really addressing the matter. And you would recall that last year in November, we actually presented an HR plan. And that HR plan was actually going to assist us with dealing with the issues of the over expenditure on the cost of the employees. And this HR plan, Chairperson, it was a hybrid. We looked at the reduction of man days, where we moved from 2.6 million to 1.9, meaning that we saved 700,000 man days. Some of it we also decided that we will not actually increase the allowances, we'll keep them going for quite a bit on that front. The other one that we looked at is that in terms of our rejuvenation plan, it was not going to be possible on a year-on-year basis to be able to absorb. And as the presenter mentioned earlier on, that this year we did not actually absorb, because we were then proposing that we should do this over once every 3 years. And I think that we needed to stagger it. Our research at that time and the work we had done, and I didn't exhaust actually all the options that we had put there, but it was endorsed by the portfolio committee. And then we had anticipated that roughly per year we should make a saving of about 1.5 billion. But it would vary, because remember, in some years you'll absorb the new people, in some years you will not absorb. One of the other things that we had mentioned was the issue of MEM, the military exit mechanism, and then the EISP. Subsequent to that, we actually engaged our colleagues in Treasury, and they warmed up to the plan. And when we followed up particularly on the issues of MEM, then they came back to say that they don't have that money and it is not available. And of course, that does then impact on that. Now, you will see that on the presentation we made, we then said that the shortfall on the COE now will be about 2.2 billion. But one can hasten to say that that number can also increase because of the requirement of PROSPER, that we have deployed the people, but we have also deployed in Mozambique. So when you deploy, it means that the issues of the allowances kick in, and that will actually take the cost of the employees to a higher level and will probably most likely exceed the 2.2 billion that we have put there. Then most of the programs and the targets we did not achieve, Chairperson, it is largely because of the COVID-19. We actually, in fact, it also impacts on the issues of service delivery, because depending on the way we are in, we then get a circular that comes from public service admin, and one place they'll say you can operate at 50% capacity. Sometimes they'll say we operate at 30% capacity. And now, even in the enterprise, they are saying that within the next 6 weeks or so, we may find ourselves in the fourth wave.
And what has been shown is that each wave that comes is much more severe than the previous one. So we may also have to reduce the number of people that come in. And we must say that even those that were working, we have also experienced quite a number of our colleagues that have been impacted by COVID. And even within this quarter, we had to take a decision that in some of our training facilities, we needed actually to put them on hold because there were just too huge a number of our own colleagues that were impacted by the virus. So the issues are a mix, and some of them is because we are waiting for a longer period of time for the spares to arrive and things like that. So it is a combination of factors, but I think largely also the issue of COVID impacted on that. Chairperson, there was also a question on the 29.7 billion. Yes, again, Operation Prosper will impact that. Remember that we were requested to deploy until the next month. It is possible that that will be extended. And also, even when you look at Operation Bugela in Mozambique, we have also set a target of 3 months there. And we may have to be there for a much longer period. They are a neighboring country. There are many reasons why, political reasons why they are critical for us as South Africa as a country. So those are some of the things that sometimes, you know, we could not even foresee that those are the areas where we would be needed, particularly if we take Prosper. Even the amount of money that we got from Bugela, it was the money that was saved by National Treasury as the reserve. And all of us, seeing where we are at now, we know that that amount of money will not be sufficient. Chairperson, the issues with negotiations with Treasury, we engage with them on an ongoing basis. But also, I think that generally, as a country, we operate in a very financially constrained environment, in the sense that our economy has not been performing well, and all other departments are crying on the shoulder of Treasury for them to increase the amount of money. I think the question that was also asked by Honorable Mare is very interesting, and we have been even talking about it ourselves, that if you take us, you contract us with the police. The police are trained for public order policing. They have to be visible. They fight crime. They have to be on the street all the time. Whereas with us, when we are required to deploy as defense, where it has to be different because then we have to go through the parliamentary process where we ask for permission to deploy the people that we are going to deploy. But if you also look, the training of the soldiers is the training for people that are trained to go to war. If you look at our capabilities, there are capabilities like this, and you know, we even got calls, people who say, oh, you've got your rifles, you've got your records, you are really fighting, but what do we do in a constrained, fiscally constrained, constrained environment where we are required that we must deploy? So we really had to pull whatever was there for us to be able to do that. In actual fact, I think that one of the things that came out even handy is that with the work that we did, we then actually got the businesses and the communities that responded positively to the work that we did in terms of our deployment. Some donated fuel, and some were donating food, and some even they were donating accommodation, and that spoke to maybe the appreciation of the kind of work that we are doing. And yes, I agree that the role of the Defence Force is changing, and we need to still adjust. But our constitutional mandate is still the constitutional mandate that we see in the Constitution that hasn't changed, even though the role of the Defence Force is changing. the issue of the hotel bio and the project bio and project hotel. Chairperson, we took this from our SDA reserve. Remember that the SDA was made available for us to deliver on our sovereign capabilities. And by their nature, those projects, they are multi-year projects. So we are allowed by the Treasury regulations that under the SDA, we can roll over those funds. There are projects that have been approved where the funds were made available. And it is clear for us, for instance, if you were to take a project like Project Move ASAP, there is right now we are very far off from really delivering and achieving the goals of Project Move ASAP. Now, because of the constrained environment that our Navy finds itself in, we then had to take so that then at least to make sure that we get the three IPs and get the three OPs so that then we are also able to patrol our channel. I think that I will maybe hand over on some of the issues to our colleagues there. I'm sitting here with our colleagues that come from the uniform environment. I've got the chief of staff from the chief's office, maybe if he wants to comment on some of the questions that have been raised, the issues of the heat.
Thank you, Sekia. Acting chair and the members of the committee, Sekia, I don't think I should say much because I think Sekia has been pointing now. Probably, Ajita, maybe just make a peep through on the matter of the preparation for internal operations as passed by Honorable Marai. We did anticipate some of our involvement in Canada some time ago. At the time, we started a little bit at infantry school by obtaining some very minimal equipment for kind of internal trade. And this was brought about even not by our own situation inside SA that time in our mind. It was brought by some upheaval in DRC in Goma, where the population, due to lack of active operations, sometimes authorized by UNESCO, where the people complained and start throwing stones at the UN members, including our own members, and damaging the region. And then we foresaw that that might also come at home and pray for it. So we started a minimal thing. But the budget cut was sort of almost nullified as well, the progression on that. The second part was the issue of mobility on our borders, which was very much constrained as well. We then went about to procure from within own budget what you call the troop tax, which I think the honorable members have seen in our borders. And those troop beds are basically soft-skinned vehicles, but enabled, in a way, to deploy according to some kind of, adapted doctrinal approach. Those, however, due to cost containment that we couldn't go over, the specifications of developing those could not be exactly according to each border post as it were. For an example, in Gate 6, as you have seen on your tour, is full of sand and therefore if vehicles are low, they don't survive. In Maluji, it's mountainous and very rough and sharp rocks. So all those things need to be attended per specification per area. I can't take you through now, it will be the whole day taking through due to this, knowing that maybe some of you have Westminster background, some of you not. So I don't want to go to those details now. Therefore, for instance, as I was discussing with the chief assembly of this process, was the fact that we need a very serious high mobility, both on our normal rural areas and on our urban. You can't do that without taking from Peter to pay for. We don't even have the money from Peter, as things stand now. And that's why other business people even gave us budgets to you, which I think is a bit great of an economy like ours, which should be seen to be projecting for. And if you see an example like Libya, it took 3 days from a protest to an election. 3 days. And the Amharics were being attacked. So unless we recalibrate our own thinking and what we want with our different forces, we will be able to do that. And the most fundamental thing when you are dealing with the military approach to these things is integration. And those are my last words now. The military has to always be integrated in terms of its capabilities to respond to any kind of conflict. And that conflict might both be internal and external all at the same time. We have had, in the last 3-4 years, to close multiple projects, which we were already far advanced with payments, millions spent on them. So we had had to mothball those and put aside, simply because of budget cuts every year. We ended up having to do nothing. Meaning, what we have now is completely not according to doctrine, not even to our logistic joint force employment kind of doctrinal approach, and therefore we can't integrate the things we do, and the military force should be able to do. And maybe General Mansoni will have something to say.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, maybe last
lastly, for myself, just to say that on the issue of 1.79 billion, it's the same situation taking from Peter to St. Paul. But I just must say that also we are always engaging with National Treasury. And when we go there, they will also make it clear that they don't have the money. And then the best they can give us is that whatever we ask for, they would rather give you an approval for you to go and do reprioritization. So whatever the case, it means that it comes back to ourselves to then say that what are the priorities of priorities, you know, and it's a little bit difficult. And yes, I know that certain things, they get compromised, but that's the environment in which we find ourselves. We continue on an ongoing basis to negotiate on that and then try to really give it our best. And Jefferson, we submit from our side our responses on the questions that we pose.
Thank you. Thank you so much, SECDEF and your team for the responses. Honourable Marais, is that a new hand or did you lower
it? Yes, that's a new hand, Jeffrey. That's a new hand.
Okay, you want to follow up or you want to raise new issues?
Just follow up on the questions, Jeffrey.
Okay, I'll give you 5 minutes. 2 minutes.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I want to just ask again, I have requested the values of the commitments under Hotel and Prosper, under Hotel and Biro, which was not given. And then I also on a Biro and Hotel. SECDEF, you said it comes from SDA, but we know that SDA is now empty. So if it is empty, it must come from somewhere. Either it's been in a reserve somewhere or, you know, SDA will be refinanced. So obviously we must just have the information in that regard. I want to say that with regards to the cost of employees, the Minister of Defence has said to us on the 14th of last month at the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, the President has said, don't worry about the money, it will be provided for. Now, it was also said to us and confirmed by the previous Minister of Defence that Operation Vukela will be fully funded by SADC. Now, if those are going to affect our budget, where they then now goes back onto their words and say that we must fund it from stealing from Peter to pay Paul, that is not fair, and that was not our contract with the president, and his contract with us. So we must get absolute clarity on that, and how that operations will be funded, and then specifically on a Biro and Hotel. I want to say that reduction of mandates, budgeted mandates, one must emphasize, is not the answer. And we have now seen it with Prosper. We have now seen it with Vukela. We will probably see it with Corona in the future. The reducing mandates to make the budget balance is not the answer. We will have to come up with something else, and that is the reduction of the regular force numbers. If we do not deal with that and acknowledge that, then we are fooling ourselves. I want to state the following too, just lastly, Chairperson. Our priorities must be, and it must be a collective, the refit of the three frigates, the refit of the three submarines, the enormous problems that we've got with air platforms, that if we don't deal with that and address that, then we are just delaying the obvious outcome of total destruction. There are certain land work items and equipment that we have to deal with, otherwise we will only have boots on the ground but no support in terms of equipment. And then lastly, Chairperson, and this comes from the SCOA report,
I think the question from Honourable Marais was that on the issue of compensation of employees, it was said that money will be made available to cater for that. And then I am just responding to say that as a department, we have never received anything to deal with the issues of the COE outside actually the HR plan that we had presented to the committee. And then I think that what I will do, Chairperson, if it is okay, I would ask Admiral Gugu to respond on some of those COE and the HR issues. Admiral.
Thank you, Inspector. Thanks to the acting chair. And then I'm just going to respond on the issue of COE, which is just to give perspective of the challenges that we are dealing with. I can confirm that the last 2 years, before the current cut, we were already at 31 billion in terms of the COE. And that was already, obviously, the money that was not actually catering the cost of what we need as what we projected, because at the time we were talking about 34 billion. So we were already underfunded in the last two years when we were actually giving the 31 billion. Subsequent to that, we still cut further by another 2 billion to come to the 39 billion that we currently have. So I just want to emphasize that part two for the members of the Portfolio Committee to see that the spike or the overexpenditure that we're talking about is not that there has not been anything that has been done. It's because of the continuous cuts that are happening that put us in where we are now. So the 2.2 billion that we now say we are short of, if there was no other further cuts of another 2 billion, probably we could have said we can break even now if it was not taken up. So I think as we're talking about the cut or the compensation of employees, we must also factor the cut. And it's not possible that every time we have got to cut, you must also cut on personnel. It is not going to be possible. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem. But yes, we found ourselves in a difficult situation where we had to go back now and reprioritize and go say, let's cut on the mandate, let's cut on the personnel. So you can't only get one. You have to have a model that talks to, you know, how you're going to move forward. That's why we have all those five innovations that we mentioned. And those are the ones that we talk about. And then I also want to also say that if we look at last year, we only were over by 1.7. So we were already over by 1.7. So which means there was also further reduction in terms of the compensation of employees. The reason we are now saying the 2.2 now, there's a pay progression that needs to be paid. There's also extended deployment that we're not planned for. All these issues, and now we're going also to be required to pay them up to 1,000 per month from April going forward. So the bargaining council, which also has increased the amount that we have to pay to our own members, or the salaries or allowances of our own members, also has been already factored in terms of the 3.2 billion. So it's not because there has not been anything that has been done. If there were no all these other increments that are that we're discussing now, probably could have been less. In the past, Treasury used to give that money. When there are general increments, etc., the money always came from Treasury. That's why we were not feeling it. But now Treasury is not giving you that money. It says we increase, or you know, at the bargaining council they agree on the increment of salaries of our people, but then you must fund it yourself because Treasury does not also have money. So it needs to be factored to say this is not really something that is under control of the DOD. And you cannot also say you're not going to continuously pay people their increments, including the salary progression, because it becomes a matter of the bargaining councils, and you will also be found wanting if you don't do that. So we are where we are because of the cuts, not because of the number of people or the number of mandates, because of the cuts that we constantly receive, but also we cannot also say we're not paying. So all these issues, we have to look at them, and I think we find ourselves in a difficult situation. But I can assure the Honourable House to say, the reduction in terms of the mandates and the reduction, the 2,000 reduction in terms of personnel, has actually placed us in a better position to even justify where we are in terms of compensation. And then I also say the Treasury also has received a positive view this time around, because they also understand the dynamics that we're sitting with. To cut 2,000 people now, and also the mandate, something that has never been done by this organization before. And then I think we need to appreciate that as well. But it's not possible to cut more than what we have cut now. We need to have injection of money at some stage. Without injection of money, I don't think we're going anywhere. I think we need to be clear on that. You cannot continuously cut on personnel. Otherwise, you're going to have the department that you don't even have people. And this is where we need now the committee also to supporting us on that issue. We cannot, and then I want to repeat, we cannot continuously cut on personnel. We have cut already. We have put ourselves in this difficult situation. We will be, unfortunately, in the future, not even be able to conduct certain operations if we continue like that. And I don't think this is the department that we want to have. I submit to the chair.
Thank you. Effective, are you done?
Yes,
we've done Okay. Thank you. I just want to, Brian, you must make a note on the one of the money will be made available, because I think I must agree with Honorable Murray. So not for now, but make a note so that we as committee can follow up on that one. And then I don't know, Sekdev, will you be part of the meeting or will you leave us now?
Okay, this is from our side.
Okay. Sekdev, just to conclude, to say that we understand, we fully understand your the frustration and the issue of reprioritization, and it really not assist us, but Sekdev, we wish you and your team good health and the ability to do more with less. As a portfolio committee, we must and we will do oversight without fear or favor, but you must trust us with what you experience for us to assist you. So thank you, and please be safe. You can excuse us now.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, then Brian, we will move to our no, 2.5, the briefing of military veterans on its quarterly report and the BRRR report. We must keep in mind the time, because it's already past 12. So if possible, can the presenter just speak to the slide, because we already received the presentation. So I will now give over to the person who will do the presentation on the DMV's fourth quarterly report. Thank you. DMV, can you hear me? Brian?
They should be... Apologies, Chair, I was just trying to unmute, find the button to unmute.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. You can proceed. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Irene Boreni, Director General for DMV. I'm here with a team. The CFO, Mr. Ndobi. I'm here with Mr. CMO, the Chief Director of Research, Acting Skills, Mr. Matole, Ms. Sotondoshe, Social Economy, Chief Director, Health and Wellness, Ms. Murolo, Chief Director, Beneficiary, Mr. Matafu, Director, Planning, Mr. Rampile, Director, ICT, Ms. Maskman, Director, Internal Audit, Ms. Masamba, and Mr. CMO will be doing the presentation for us. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members.
Thank you, DGM. Good afternoon, Acting Chair and Board members. Would you show the presentation on my behalf, sir, please?
Whilst you are busy preparing, I just want to welcome the deputy. Most welcome, DM.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to honourable member. Thank you.
Thank you very much, then. Chair, I will, as indicated, move very fast through the presentation as directed by the acting chair. Next slide. Yes, and then next slide. Okay. And this is the approved departmental budget structure. This is how then we normally report in terms of where the budget is loaded in the department. This is mostly categorized into different sub-programs in the department. These three branches, as honorable members would know, that is administration, social economic support, and empowerment and stakeholder management. Thank you. Next slide, please. Then for quarter four, as per the brief and requirements, this is the summary of how the department has fared. These now are not audited financials. Honorable members will have an opportunity to look at the audited figures once we are presenting the annual report. But basically, the department as at quarter four had spent 88% of its budget. That is in the budget allocated, which was also a reduced budget from the budget cut of 480 million, the department was only able to spend 424 million. And there is about 55 million that was returned to the treasury. I think you will see in the audited amount that amount gets reduced to about 51 million. Next slide. Then, in terms of then the summary, in terms of why the department, the reasons for non-expenditure. These, at a very high level, basically, are some of the key reasons why we have not spent. Mostly, you would find when we look at the economic classification, the COE, compensation of employees, the department has not spent 100% there, and it's mostly because of the vacant posts, mostly at a senior level, on the established structure in the department. And I think we are also able to report, maybe as part of some of these posts are in the process of being filled. We know that the permanent director general has now been appointed, and the two DDGs posts are at the level of shortlisting. Some of the I think the two directors, HR and legal, are in the process of interviews, and then the two chief directors are also, one socioeconomic support that has been advertised, and one talks to memorization, burial, and that one has also been advertised. Then what we see here is that you would see then later on when I go to details in terms of financials that towards quarter four, especially in quarter four, there was much improvement in terms of some benefits, especially in program two in socioeconomic support, around healthcare support and housing, and spend on housing, where we began to receive a lot of invoices from the provinces, especially Gauteng. And also we began to because the healthcare, you know, benefits was in demand in that quarter four, we paid a lot of invoices to SEMS. And we are really not doing well. It's issues of, because we planned as a department to host a number of conferences on behalf of the associations, because of the COVID limitations, then we're not able to do that. Hence, you'd see in line items such as accommodation, travel, venues and facilities, you'll see that that's where then we, as a department, we didn't do very well. And then the issues, the amount then that was meant to have been spent on capital expenditure was offset, because there were some, as I indicated earlier, on some of the benefits that I think towards in quarter four, really there was a lot of improvement around expenditure in those areas. So basically, honorable members, this, at high level, these are the all of its budget allocated to it. If we move to the next slide, then the next slide then we'll talk just to it's a summary that is that shows in terms of then the economic classifications. What's encouraging here is that in areas where there's money for benefits, as a department, we've been able really to improve. And it's mostly, I think, as I indicated, around issues of compensation of employees and also the line item that talked to capital assets that we didn't do that well. Let's move to the next slide. Then when we talk on the slide, then that talks to benefits. So next slide, please. This is now, yes, thank you. Then this is where now a bulk of the departmental expenditure is. It shows then how the department has done in terms of benefits. As I indicated, I think we did quite well in recovering towards in quarter four. However, I think we still need to improve as a department around ensuring that we improve on the skills development. I know that Director General has some proposed interventions in how we are going to improve in that area. So this is an outlook then in terms of the benefits. Next slide. So then we move then, honourable members, I will just talk maybe to the overall summary, and then quickly run through then to areas where we have not spent or we have not done well in performance as a department. For quarter four as a department, we achieved 50% of our targets, and it's classified according to the three programs. Admin, socioeconomic support, and ESM. I think then let's move then to areas then where then the department has not done well, where we've explained how we as a department plan to improve on those areas. If we jump fair to the slides that talk to each of the indicators. Let's jump this one, because this is just a graphical representation of how the department has performed. And let's move to the next one. Next one. This is just administration. To say in administration, we really didn't have any challenges.
as we had in quarter four then managed to do what we needed to do. Let's move to the next one. Next one, this also again talks to administration. Then when we move then to socioeconomic support, which is where then most of the benefits in the department are sitting, we are beginning to see that we only manage 38%, and these are the areas where we didn't do well. It's around the compensation, number of military veterans approved for compensation, and here, as we have always indicated in our report for the previous financial year, that because of the nature of how this benefit is paid or how this benefit gets accessed, you know, for payment, it requires you know, a one-on-one or physical contact, which then when we had a higher level regulations, it became a bit difficult to do assessments of military veterans. So then we were not able to achieve in that. And then we'll move to the next slide. I'm focusing, honorable members, on the areas where there is red, where we really did not do well in quarter four as a department. And then the next two indicators, which talk to pension and talk to subsidized public transport for military veterans. We have not done well in those two benefits because we have not we do not have an approved policies in both those areas. I must indicate, though, however, that with the intervention of the presidential task team, especially on the pension benefits, you will begin to see when we report on quarter one for the department, there is a lot of improvement that we have done there, to the extent that we are quite happy in terms of you know, with the progress that has been made towards the payment of the pension benefit to military veterans. We're a bit behind with the subsidized transport, and that is because of the complication in relation to the stakeholders that need to be involved in that, because we are dealing with the national government, National Department of Transport, which in turn has the benefit is being implemented at the provincial level, and even at provincial level, the service providers get appointed through various municipalities. So we really have to gather everyone around so that we ensure that then we put together a proper kind of subsidized transport. We know that some of the provinces, in our engagement through the presidential task team, have reported that they have been working within their own provincial departments to roll out the subsidized transport. So we are at that phase with the subsidized transport, but we are indeed working hard to ensure that then we get the policy approved within this financial year. Then the one on batteries, that target was also affected by the budget cuts last year, and it was reduced. I think it was 7,500, and then it was reduced to 3,500 because of the budget cut. However, there were also other factors, you know, that came into play here, whereby some of the students that the department was paying for ended up now being paid for under NSFAS, so that basically reduced the number of now of dependents factors that led to us then having to reduce that target. But here the challenges in education is really mostly issues of administration, where we documents that are supposed to be in place for us to be able to approve and pay for students are normally not in place. So hence then we'll find, you know, that we have challenges. But we have been working as a department with the help from DOD officials to ensure that we eradicate this challenge. Then let's move to the next slide. And then these targets I will jump, because it talks to healthcare by indicated we have been able to do well here, because this was, I think it was during the COVID time, it was a benefit that was in demand. So we have been able to then provide military veterans with access to healthcare. And also dedicated counseling. We also have not really had challenges in that environment. Then let's move to program 3, where we've achieved only 2 of the 5 indicators for quarter 4. And when we move then to specific reasons why we did not achieve, the memorial lectures, and how then the department has been doing this, it has been physical memorial lectures, in the sense that we would book a venue and we would have a memorial lecture. But we have learned, you know, and benchmarked, I think, around, especially during the COVID time, where we are going to improve on this, because we have seen in terms of our benchmarking, there are a lot of virtual kind of memorial lectures that have been taking place. Because we have mostly been relying on physical engagement, this has led to us not being able to really achieve in this particular indicator. And then when we talk then to the skills development, I think I've spoken to say that there is an initiative that we've undertaken as a department to be proactive around offering military veterans skills development. We go now visit provinces, and I think we've seen, honorable members, that from the numbers that we used to present as a department in the past, we have really improved on this particular indicator. And I think going forward, I think with the interventions and the discussions that UPG is having with us, I'm sure we're going to improve drastically on this particular issue. Then the next one, next slide. And then the last slide, where we've really not done very well, is the employment opportunities for military veterans. Maybe let me start with the last slide, where that target of erecting memorial sites was discontinued because of the budget cut in the previous financial year, because of the COVID impact. However, we have resuscitated that, you would see in the current planning instrument. But now we are working with the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of how we then implement this this particular indicator. Then when we talk to employment opportunities, here we mostly rely on our state or sister departments, or even to a certain extent private companies to employ military veterans. So what we do as a department, we collect a list of military veterans, and then we submit to the state organs or government departments or companies for them to consider employing military veterans. So we have really not been successful here in terms of monitoring whether indeed the veterans that we have submitted to these entities did indeed get employed. It might be that they never, you know, there is maybe a lack in terms of that feedback from these organs to us in terms of how they fed with the names that have been submitted. So indeed, we are going to improve in terms of M&E around specifically this particular area, you know, in terms of how then a military veterans taken care of in those companies that we have approached for employment opportunities. Then the next slide. Then the next slide, I think, talks to human resource statistics, there's two tables in this slide, honorable members. The first one talks to the top part, talks to the members in the department, permanent employees in the Department of Military Veterans. Currently, we, for quarter four, we're sitting on 123 permanent employees. And of course, that's a breakdown in terms of gender and also in terms of demographics. And then the table below talks to then contract workers. I know that in the past there's been a discussion at this platform to say, honorable members, that how will the department take care of these contract workers, because we can't be sitting on 60 contract workers year on, year out as a department. I think we have taken an initiative in the department. I think the DG now has absorbed about 10 contract workers as of, I think, last week in the current establishment, who are going to be assisting in the provinces. In ensuring that we improve efficiency in the provinces. So we are indeed as a department thinking about then and working out how then the rest of these contract workers are brought into the established establishment as a department. Then when we move to the next slide, it talks to the interns in the department. We had 16 interns in the department for the past 2 years. And I think the last core of these interns, or the last group, is going to be exiting in September. As a department, we did not attract any more interns for this financial year. So we will not have interns as of September going forward in the department. Then when we move to the next slide, then the next slide, as a requirement, honorable members, we were requested as part of how we report, is that we must actually provide intervention in terms of or report on the interventions, COVID interventions that the department is implementing. But in this slide, you would see that most of the interventions that are reported here are mostly focusing on the employees. As honorable members would be aware, that I think the most visible one that is really looking outward in terms of military veterans is as the SRD that the department has been paying to military veterans, or the top-up to the government SRT that was announced for the COVID intervention. But most of what we have here is mostly focusing on how we assist employees during the COVID 19 pandemic. Then the next slide. And I think that's the last slide, Acting Chair. Thank you very much. I'm not Acting Chair, you would want to briefly take
us through the BRRR.
Okay, thank you, Chair. In terms of the BRRR, we had 15 recommendations in the BRRR, and we have provided really detailed analysis or reports in terms of how we are implementing those. I'm not sure whether I should, whether you would want them to be presented, or I can simply just go through some of the at a very high level.
Yes, but I think they can place it on the screen, and then okay. You can just go through it. Yes.
No, thanks, Sajid.
Because we are really pressing now for time.
No, I'll be very brief, Acting Chair. Can you? can you share the document, please, sir? However, maybe whilst we wait for the document, I can start with the presentation. The first recommendation talked to how then we, as a department, we reduced the skills development targets from 2021 financial year, because we've always had a historic target of 5,500, and that was reduced to 1,000 rand in the year that we were discussing. So as a response then to the department, we have said that we have to implement this skills development with other state organs. The department has been signing several MOUs with state organs, specifically with the CITAS and mostly with NHBRC, which is, it talks to the building National Home Builders Association Council, to assist military veterans with skills training, especially in the built environment, because we know that military veterans wanted to be part of building houses for military veterans through their own companies. So we have that MOU in place, and we have been talking to CITAS also to assist us through their programs to train military veterans on some of the programs available there. And then the committee also felt that if I move to the next recommendation, there was underperformance in program two, which has most of the a bulk of the benefits. And then the committee then recommended that this must be addressed. So as a department then, we are saying that we are working as a department on the organizational redesign, which is going to be responding to the needs of the department and the mandate of the department. But mostly what we have seen here is that part of the issue here is how then at a systematic level, how the department is positioned to respond to the mandate of the department. Because especially this became clear when the department has been in this discussion with the presidential task team, where the attempt there is to ensure that provincial government departments and municipalities do respond and assist military veterans where they are, instead of us as a department in Pretoria developing initiatives or interventions to assist military veterans. And moreover then, what we are then saying as a department is that the absence the issue there of leadership in that program has been hampering the program. Now that we are in the process of appointing a DDG, that environment is stabilize that department, I mean that program. And then again, the issue that was raised again was non-performance with the strategic planning, policy development, and monitoring and evaluation sub-program. Here in this sub-program, most of the budget is sitting it's for research work that is being done in the department. And in the past, we've really had a problem in terms of contracting our research partners and ensuring that we put out the plans. But that has since been rectified, where now we have signed contracts and SLAs, mostly with the Human Science Research Council, where now the work has begun. And I'm sure when we talk to performance for quarter one of the new financial year, of the current financial year, would be reporting on the progress that is being made, especially in the liberation struggle history, where we're documenting liberation struggle history for military veterans. Then, then the issue of the database, where the committee was saying that the DMV should report on the progress being made with the database at scheduled meetings. We have really given here a very detailed explanation in terms of where we are, mostly around the verification of the NSF members, you know, that we have not been verified in the longest time, because we've had about 5,921 files that have been sitting in the department. So we have, through the presidential task team, been implementing that through that work stream of the that is being led by the Department of Defense together with the Department of Military Veterans. So we have provided a detailed progress in terms of the challenges there, and also how then we plan to ensure that those NSF members are verified and those that qualify are included in the database. Then when we talk then to and then performance in program three. I think I've spoken to this mostly in relation to the memorial sites and also in terms of training and skills development, where I indicated that now with the memorial sites, we are working with the Department of Sport, Art and Culture. There is an MOU between ourselves and DISAC, and there is a steering committee being led by the two deputy director generals in the two departments, which is really driving the issue of memorialization, and also with the issue of training and skills development. There are a number of initiatives, starting with the issue of Operation Shasela, and now there are a number of initiatives that have been lined up, especially that talk to infrastructure development, which is going to benefit military veterans. So we are now in the process of finalizing contractual obligations amongst DMV and those entities that will be involved in this. And then the issue, the committee, if I move to F, the committee recommends that the leadership of the department should pay particular attention to issues raised by the audit committee and HESA. We have said as a department that we fully acknowledge all the issues that have been raised. The internal audit function in the department liaises mostly with AXA and also with the branch heads, where now the issue of the audit implementation plan is being dealt with. But we're still acknowledging the fact that there's more work that needs to be done for the department to really deal with the issues that have been raised by the audit committee and AG South Africa. And then the issue of leadership challenges in the department and consequence management. There was, if honorable members remember, there was that work that was undertaken by the, was being assisted by National Treasury and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and with the long cases that have been in the department. So a report has been received, and DG has appointed a team of external officials that are dealing with consequence management. So cases now are being dealt with. We know that some letters have been written to certain officials to account for the issues that is raised in the report. the issue of consequence management is being dealt with. I indicated the issues of vacant senior positions is being dealt with, whereby the director general was appointed and the two deputy posts are being, as we speak, being filled. And when I talk to the issue of pension and public transport policies, I've spoken to this area on, where we have been, I've explained, we have been working with Department of Social Development on the pension, Social Development, GPA, and National Treasury. And we are at a stage now where this is there, but it just needs to go through its processes, approval processes. Where I've indicated where we're a bit challenged is the issue of subsidized public transport. But I'm sure we will speed that up also, like we did with the pension policy. Issue of the, I think of this one of vacancies, I think we've dealt with the single SMS posts have been advertised, all of them, and we are now in the process of filling those posts. And also, as a department, we are working on finalizing the structure. I think we were directed also by the Director General and the Deputy Minister to move very fast with this exercise. So we are on. And this one, the committee recommended that the department proceed on the skills audit exercise, given that some money was spent in the exercise. There was a committee that was set up by the previous DG. However, there is an investigation that is underway to deal with this matter with finality. I'm sure then once that report comes out, and then the recommendations of the report will be implemented, like the department is doing with the other area in terms of consequence management. So this work is ongoing, and investigation is underway. Then the committee recommended the issue of access to nearby public and private hospitals via sick bays and military hospitals should be enhanced, and speeding up processes to authorize treatment for special services based on referral by military health practitioners. We would have seen in the report that we presented earlier on that, as I indicated when I reported that there's been a big improvement in that benefit in terms of healthcare. So we are continuously working with SAMHS on improving the speed with which both SAMHS and the department approves authorization for access to healthcare. So here we really mostly depend on SAMHS, but we have really improved our working relations with SAMHS to ensure that the approvals are done speedily, and also the patients then are referred to where they need to be referred seamlessly without any problems. Then the issue of the committee recommended that the department basis inform it on the status of legal claims against the department, including the fiscal implication of each claim. At every MANCO, there is a report that gets presented, the MANCO being the management body of the department. There is a report that gets presented that talks to this, to the litigations against the department. the most one has really been the Zille matter, and the matter was heard earlier in the year. I think it was in February, and also I think around May. So we are just waiting for the outcomes of that hearing, because once this is the biggest litigation kind of matter that has a potential implication for the department. So as soon as then that an outcome in terms of this case is had, then we'll be able to see how then we move as a department. But we have been assured, honourable members, by our legal team that, in the last presentation or in the last sitting of this matter, there were issues that were really presented during the matter that points to a positive outcome towards the department. And then, the issue of housing challenges, the committee recommended that the DMV should keep the committee abreast in terms of measures to speed up housing for military veterans against the background that appeared to be lack of eagerness out of provincial housing departments to request such funding from DMV. As I indicated when I did the performance report, that we have seen a lot of improvement in provinces submitting invoices. I know that there's been a discussion at a departmental level to say why can't then the provincial departments take the tab to pay for military veterans houses if they are not able then to invoice the departments. But it's something that the department is going to be engaging with human settlements as we are beginning to review the MOU that we are having with them. So we will keep the committee updated in terms of how then the discussions are going. But however, I must indicate that there was a lot of improvement in submission of invoices during the quarter four of the year. And then the issue of illegal occupation of the houses. Here we are working with human settlements in dealing with the matter. We know that in several initiatives there have been illegal occupations, and we have really been discussing this with the Department of Human Settlement, especially around KZN and also here in Gauteng, in those areas. But this is an ongoing matter because these invasions continue to happen, and nevertheless. And then the last one, honourable members, talks to the committee recommends that the department enhance its communication with military veterans, such that the department responds to military veterans within the stipulated time frame. If then the military veteran is not satisfied with the decision, then the veterans must be advised that they can approach the appeals board. We do that all the time, and I think our legal services has really assisted in this case lately, where they've even reminded branches to say there must be a specific timeline or the when a military veteran applies for a benefit, must be given an acknowledgement that they've applied within a specific timeline. And should then, when the evaluation happens and the military veteran is not granted a benefit, then they must also be given a response in writing and also be advised of then a matter that they can seek alternative recourse through the appeals board. So in high level, honourable members, that is the recommendations that were presented to the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I also want to congratulate and welcome our DG, Irene Mokbeweni, in this position. It is good because you are a woman, and especially during this Women's Month. And DG, we hope that you already look into the hiccups for not accommodating or implementing most of the issues of our military veterans, and also to propose those how to deal with it. I want to ask you to be progressive and engage with us on proposals that you think will affect or will help to implement most of this benefits. Thank you for the proposal. Honorable members, you must, for the presentation. Honorable members, you must guide me now. I think it's almost 1 o'clock. And we must now engage with the report. So will we be able to have 30 minutes or what is the situation, Brian?
We may proceed, Mama, until 1:30.
Can we proceed until 1:30?
That is correct, if members agree.
Okay. Honorable members, is it okay?
Yeah, no problem, Tiffany.
Okay, I have Honorable Mutle and Honorable Shalembe. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I just have one clarification question from the presentation in relation to intent. It has been indicated that there will be no intake, or there is no intake for now. I just want to find out those that were part of their program, how many have they absorbed, or is just a question of compliance, inviting interns in, imparting that minimal experience, and then you let them go to the street and see for themselves. If we can get a clarity, how many have, because previously, as we welcome the new DG, we have indicated with the previous DG that it can continue to be correct that in the midst of the unemployment crisis that we are faced with as a country, we then embark on programs for compliance without a plan to absorb. So in the main, these people that we are talking about are young people, are young graduates, and they become frustrated. And remember, in terms of the regulation in that regulates this intent, is that once you have done an internship, you cannot apply for another internship elsewhere. Now, you do an internship once and you become frustrated for a longer period on the street. So what programs do they have to ensure that, how many have they absorbed, and what is their plan going forward? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mutle, Honorable Chileme, and Honorable Marais.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start by raising my concern about the meeting. I don't want that at a later stage we are challenged in that meeting that we have today. Well, I mean, in the beginning, it was confirmed that, I mean, the quorum for this meeting is 6. Now, I was checking if Chairperson, maybe we can... Gallery Perus,
that how many members are serving in this portfolio committee. In my understanding, it's 13. If I mean it's 13, I don't think it will be the quorum.
Honorable Chilembe? Honorable Chilembe?
Yes.
Can I ask you to deal with the presentation? And then after that, we will excuse the department, and then we as a committee can then deal with this one. Please.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm just looking to the issue of the importance of the military veterans. To me, they are very, very important because of their role they played, when they were protecting the country. But Chairperson, if I look, to the Act, as it says, is the Act is number 18 of 2011. Now we are in 2021. But you are still, having a problem when it comes to deliver as expected. Now, I've got a question here that in 2021 budget, we had the challenge where, the budget was pruned down, I think, more than 200 million in that department. But the department, had to underspend by 51 million. I just want to know, how are they going to convince the Department of National Treasury? Because, on a number of occasions, the Department of National Treasury has been cautioning the Department of Underspending. Chairperson, again, I'm not convinced if maybe the issue of this lockdown are used as an excuse to say they can't spend the budget because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But, this thing of the lockdown is something from last year and this year. So all the years, this has not been happening. So I don't think the Department of National Treasury will be convinced. And, Chairperson, I'm not happy because, even that issue, of the skills audit, is taking long, although there is a recommendation that it is being attended. But I think we need, to pay more attention because if you look at this thing, it's about from 2015, we are now in 2021, we are still talking about the skills audit and no action that is, that one can be proud to say things are done. It's very, very unfair that maybe some of those people who are involved in that skills audit, look, 478,000 was paid for, no job done. So now I think maybe, I don't know what will help, the department or as members to get convinced that, this issue is given, a priority so that, those who are responsible are charged accordingly. So thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chilembe, and also thank you for understanding that we will deal with that issue after this.
Thank you, Chair. thank you very much for the presentation. We can talk a lot and we can, share views and opinions and concerns. Eventually, I have experienced, and maybe the Department of Military Veterans must give their experience, there's an incredible increase in the need by military veterans, all military veterans, for services and support, especially medical, maybe pensions, housing, etc. How is that the case? And if not, why do even we as MPs experience a incredibly slow response to cases that we pass on to Department of Military Veterans? Sometimes military veterans think that we as MPs are not doing our work because the response is just not forthcoming. Is it because of budget pressures? And how are we going to deal with this going forward? Because we can have wonderful programs, we can have wonderful ideas, but if we are not in a position
to comply with the requirements and the needs of military veterans that are in terms of the Act. How are we going forward then dealing with that? Because then it nullifies everything else that we are talking about, because eventually the only test will be to what extent have you provided in the needs and requirements of the military veterans based on the provisions and the conditions of the Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Marais. I only have one, and maybe to add to what Honorable Mutle was saying, but mine is just on the contract workers in provinces. According to the report, you appoint 10 contract workers in provinces. I want to know which provinces, and is there a consistent awareness program to inform provinces on what capacities and capabilities you have in the military veterans? Thank you, TG. You can respond, you and your team can now respond.
Thank you very much, Acting Chair, and thank you to the members. The first part that has been highlighted in terms of the interns, I think that we can be able to answer. Siego, can you provide the details to the members?
Yes, TG.
Should I go ahead, TG?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Thank you very much to honorable members. We have really not appointed in the cohort, current cohort of 15 interns, any intern in or absorbed internally in the department. Maybe that's the first question, the first answer, sorry. And, because we, in the department, we've always had this challenge of many contract workers in the department. So when we then advertise positions in the department, even at that level, at the lower levels, you would find that then interns would compete with those contract workers, you know, for those positions, you know, at those levels. So then you would find then that unfortunately, they do not make it, like as we have indicated, even in the positions that we get advertised now for provincial administrators. Unfortunately, none of them you know, could make it into that cohort. It's only been contract workers that have been absorbed into those particular positions. So the answer is, unfortunately, no, we have not been able to absorb interns.
Thank you, Siango. Let me go to the next question that the members have raised in relation to the underspending and the 61 million that has been noted as an underspending for this 2021 financial year. And the question indicates what have we done and what we are looking at doing going forward. Acting Madam Chair, we are, as a department, looking at focusing and repositioning the department into looking at the skills and empowerment program to ensure that the military veterans are able to benefit in terms of training and development and provide more support in terms of assisting them to have sustainable businesses as well. But through our DM, in terms of us as a department, he has advised us to look early into issues of understanding and ensure that we link our spending with our APP. So we have done this for this current financial year. And we are also ensuring that we will be capacitating the unit in terms of skills development and empowerment to ensure that most of our efforts are going to be invested there. The next question, which was related into the whole issue of the skills audit and the 483,000 that was paid with no work done, the department has not necessarily looked at one case. The department has reviewed most of the cases and most of the issues in relation to consequence management. To date, three officials have been set on precautionary suspension in relation of
the mismanagement matters, financial and other areas. And by tomorrow, the next official will be also put on a precautionary suspension to be able to investigate, amongst other things, this matter on the skills audit service providers that did work and that did not do any work but was paid. In terms of the next question around the benefits, if I can have Ms. Sotondoshe to answer on that question by member Mr. Marais.
Good afternoon, honorable members and acting chairperson and DG. Unfortunately, there's a network problem. I was not able to hear the question properly. If Marie could assist, the network keeps coming and going.
Okay, Ms. Sotondoshe, the member Marie is asking us as a department that why are we not responding on time on most of the benefits that we are offering. When members come and report to the MPs, we take too long to respond on those issues. What are the challenges? Is it budget problems? And what is actually needed for us to be able to respond on time and spot on in terms of the military veterans matters that are raised?
Thank you, DG. To respond to the question, the department does make attempts to respond to queries that are raised by military veterans or interested parties. We have various platforms through which we respond. We have a call center that is able to receive calls and respond to queries or escalate if there are no answers to respond to queries. We also have the email system. Some of the veterans are able to send us their queries via email and we are able to respond. Thirdly, we also have our landline, which at times they may not be able to be answered because the official could be attending to another matter, like maybe at the help desk which we have set up for walk-in. So due to the capacity at times in the department, especially in the socio-economic, we do have capacity challenges. However, we try our level best to respond through the various platforms. We also make use of the inquiries desk that we have set up in the department for those that are able to walk in. Other than that, we also rely on our provincial offices to respond to queries or questions that may come in relation to the benefits that the department is providing. So we do respond. Some may take a little bit longer because colleagues would not be available at a particular time. But as and when we get opportunities, we do respond. Some we also respond via phones or SMSs and make sure that at least we are able to respond on time. Thank you, DG and Acting Chair.
Chairperson, if I can come in here, my apologies for being, if it is rude. I mean, that was not an answer to my question. That is just, let's go on as usual. So we are frustrated. We are telling you it is happening. We are bringing this to you in a civilized way, and then you're telling us, sorry, we're doing our job, stuff that it is just not acceptable. I mean, we're experiencing it from a day to day. We as MPs, as members of the committee, and we've got nothing to help us. I mean, this is just totally unacceptable. This is part of the poor service delivery, and I cannot accept a vague and an excuse answer and a response like that. My sincere apologies for responding this way, but that is just totally unacceptable. This is giving us nothing, and it's just supporting the poor service delivery as we have experienced it now. My apologies, but that's totally unacceptable.
Honorable Murray, I
I totally agree with you. I want to understand, because this is a problem that MPs experience, and I assume that the response should be that we acknowledge it and we will look into it if there is a problem. But this is what we're currently doing. So we really want you, TG, that you must look into what Mr. Marais was saying and then come back to us if you get some issues that they are not responded to, and what was the problem that those issues are not responded to. So you can proceed, TG, with the responses.
Thank you very much, esteemed Chair. I've noted the matter, and definitely I will come back with some of the challenges, and we can be able to share how we are going to be resolving them in terms of the programs and the benefits in the department. The other question that was raised was in relation to the Act number 18 of 2011. I think it is important that we share with the members the process that is going on in terms of the review of the Act, which will include the review of all the benefits that we are offering as a department. And the task team that was formed in last year in November, when the Minister of Veterans went to the presidency, and there was a presidential task team established, which is looking at each and every aspect of the Act and the benefits. And we are still busy with the process currently as a department, and getting inputs from different stakeholders, as the presidential task team is divided into certain task teams in relation to education, health, housing, and various other aspects. And there's also subcommittees that are gathering inputs to ensure that we are able to enrich our policies. That is the current relation to the Act. I think for now, so those were the questions that we had to look into. The rest of the questions and the rest of the inputs, we have noted them as the department. I thank you, Acting Chair, and thank you to the members.
Thank you, TG. Thank you for the responses to all the officials. Honourable members, as I was saying, our time is limited, so I will now allow the Deputy Minister input. Who's on the platform? Can I allow the Deputy Minister?
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity, and once again thank you for the reflections of the members of the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans. My apology, Chair, that I joined the meeting I think almost an hour after it had started due to challenges around my connectivity today as a result of relocating from where I usually work from and using a different equipment. My apology for that. As a result, I have missed quite a chunk of the presentation of the Department of Defense comments that were made around here. Fourth quarter report and their PRR responses, PRR report responses. just one or two things, before I do that, I must also say that the committee hopefully has been informed about the reasons for the minister's absence due to the duties in her office. She's been out of the country. The issue around matters raised within the BRR report of the Department of Defense is what is becoming now evident, that our defense force cannot continue delivering its services as expected by South Africa's broad public without our leadership looking into the challenges around the equipping of the defense force. Honorable members would I want to believe, agree with me that we are forced into a situation which is undesirable. No one wants us to operate in the manner in which we are operating, but that's where we are now. A practice where for the defense force to honor its responsibility. It is through dedicated operational funding that is forwarded in order for the Defense Force to execute specific missions. It's something like, Faga imali uzobona. But you see that you can put money to operationalize a system that is fighting fit, that is well equipped. But you cannot continuously just put in money to activate a system which you have not equipped. I do not want to make reference to specific, recent, embarrassing images of our force in action, which is a function of the neglect to equip our defense force that is being committed, because it will be wrong for me to do so. But honorable members, I would imagine that in their alertness, they are aware of where we are. The practice where Parliament agrees to money that must go to the Defence Force only when it speaks to getting the Defence Force to act, when we have forgotten that we have not been looking after the needs of the systems that the force requires. It is actually going against what the Constitution says we must do with our defense force. Because the Constitution, it is in the Constitution, interestingly, that a very conscious stance was taken that our defense force must be technically highly modernized in order for us to have few men and women behind the systems. The systems must be potent systems that are managed by as few people as is possible, but delivering the outcomes that we want. It is in our constitution. And where we are actually doing the direct opposite of what the constitution says we must do with our defense establishment. That is the first point that I wanted to raise. And the issues, of course, are touched in part by the matters that were raised in the BRR report. with the minister, the leadership, I want to say to this oversight committee that there will soon be a submission by the ministry around this matter, because the new appointee in the ministry has expressed a very strong view around this, and it is a matter which, of course, she'll be able to share with the oversight committee. The other matter which I also felt I should touch on is with respect to some of the details in the BRR report, actually not in the BRR report, but in the first quarter report of the DOD, there is underspending by some, the health services, of just over 100 million rand. And that underspending happens when, of course, we know that the Department of Military Veterans has not covered entirely the needs health-wise of the military veterans that it is looking after. The budgets to cover all the needs, the health needs of military veterans are not there. As we speak, we are aware that we only look after the principal members themselves, but we don't look after their dependents as far as health is concerned. The arrangement where the Department of Military Veterans is looking after the health services of military veterans through payment for services to the Department of Defense was meant to be a temporary arrangement when the department was established 10 years ago. We in the ministry will look at the need to move forward to a permanent and ideal situation, because it would to be to an observer very, you know, inexplicable rather, that we have two departments that are sitting under one ministry. The one is underspending, it's got a over 100 million rand budget available that was not used. The other one has a responsibility to look after people that it is not sufficiently looking after because it does not have the budget. But the two departments are sitting under one ministry. Those issues are matters which we need to deal with. And hopefully, as part of the, you know, improvement, the fine-tuning of issues with respect to how the Department of Military Veterans and the Department of Defense complement each other in delivering their mandate will be shared. The other matter which I thought lastly I should raise is that, Chair, through you, at the beginning of the meeting, I assume that the program of the Oversight Committee for the next quarter was discussed as shared with us. I thought that if the committee could consider, when I looked at the proposed program, that on the 1st of September, which looks like to be the earliest possible slot where we can include on the briefing to the portfolio committee of the portfolio committee around the work that the presidential task team has been doing. We have raised the matter before, I think it was noted, but I see that throughout to the end of this term, I mean this term, yes, in October, there is no accommodation of that briefing, because some of the issues that the DG, our DG of DMV has raised, will be better, you know, dealt with or ventilated in that kind of briefing. And of course, lastly, let me say, Chair, that we would have been we would have made a big omission if at the beginning of this meeting we did not introduce the newly appointed DG of the Department of Military Veterans, Mrs. Irene Mpolweni. Even as the meeting is adjourning, I thought it is appropriate to say to the portfolio committee that the Department of Military Veterans has now a DG, a Director General, and the Director General is already, you know, on the road as far as the challenges of the department are concerned. They are very, you know, important, high-level issues that are challenges of the department that she is already grappling with. I'm very, you know, confident to say to the portfolio committee that already I can see green shoots as far as, you know, our work around the DMV is concerned. And in our next engagement, we'll probably be able to say more in that respect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, and we once again want to welcome the DG and congratulate her. Honourable Members, I think we are now done with the Department of Military Veterans, and we know, DM, that in most instances for the Department of Military Veterans to reach their service, they must interact with different departments. So we want to them to work on the intergovernmental relations. And if they will come and brief us on the work of the presidential task team, they must also focus on the impact of that task team. And I think when we ask as the committee to report quarterly on the BRRR, we want them to come and brief us on, for example, if we look at the skills development target, how did the CITAS respond to your engagement? And also to, as I was saying, the impact of the implementation of the presidential task team. And then, DG, the processes of appointment, we want it to speed up or to release the pressure on officials in certain directorates. And as I was saying right in the beginning, the pressure of COVID. We understand this is a year of extraordinary. And we must also keep in mind that we must forever try to do the best that we can in the circumstances that we now are in. And what we are used to doesn't count now, because our people, they want service. They want to be serviced. So thank you for your presentation. And thank you, DM, for always attending our meeting. Yes, and I think we can excuse you now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to committee members. Thank you very much.
Honourable Members, our last point is on the consideration and adoption of our outstanding minutes. But I think I will allow Honourable Shilembe just to raise his point. And then if we look at our time, we will not have time. And also the issue that Honourable Shilembe wants to raise also has an impact on this consideration and adoption of our outstanding minutes. So, Honourable Shilembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for allowing me such an opportunity. Chairperson, if I can get the clarity, if I can get from Brian, that how many members from the ANC, how many members from the DA, how many members from the EFF, how many members from ISP and UDM, then I will be clear what actually is the composition of the committee. Thank you.
Brian?
Chair, the committee has 11 full-time members. Of the 11 full-time members, six are ANC, Two are DA, one is EFF, one is PAC, and one is UTN. And then we have two members who are alternative members, but then the committee consists of 11 full-time members.
Honorable Flembe, so the quorum is 6. You can proceed then.
The Chairperson, I heard you speaking about the ATC, PAC. Is there anything? I didn't get well there.
Yes, I did. There's one member of the PAC.
Okay, and one member from IFP. So IFP has got no, I mean, the status in this committee.
No, no, IFP, it's an alternate member.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm worried because one day Walters, I mean, tried to speak in this committee. He's an alternate too. But, I mean, he was rejected to speak. But, I mean, IFP is an alternate, but in speaking in this committee, what is, I mean, the situation? Because that's my feeling that when he was, I mean, told not to speak because he's an alternate. But, I mean, nobody has said anything when the IFP is having a slot in the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Jalembe.
Yes, I'm listening.
Is the IFP member now in the meeting?
No, but he is always, I mean, attending this meeting. He attends this meeting, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Now, I think we can discuss it because, according to me, an alternate is someone who is standing in for someone. I'm not sure, but it is recorded now. And I think it we must discuss it because it's a concern for you. And I will ask Brian to refer it, or when we have our next meeting, that we must discuss the composition of the committee so that we can get clarity on what the role of an alternate is, or what is the role of a member who is not a permanent member of this committee. I don't know, but I think it's the only way we can deal with it.
Chairperson, I think you are quite correct. However, what you have also said, one thing is very correct. An alternative is normally an alternative to someone. So if the IFP is only an alternative member, to who is the IFP an alternative member? Then it must be for probably an ANC member or an EFF member, because he's not an alternative for the DA. So we need just to clarify that so that we know exactly where we stand also in terms of the status of members going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mare. Brian, you hear the proposal, and I think that we must discuss it so that all of us are clear on what the role of the alternate is, of those parties who only have alternates. So please, let's discuss it. Honorable members, then I think we are at the end of this meeting. Thank you for your participation, and be safe. In this meeting, stands adjourned.